Sailing at the bay.
What
babe? Babe with power.
What power?
Power of voodoo.
Excuse
you do.
Sir, what?
Remind me of the babe.
Quiet! A goblin babe. Well? I told my baby, crying hard as babe could cry. What could I do? My baby's love had gone and left my baby blue. Nobody knew what kind of magic spell to use.
Fly bad snails
or puppy dog sails,
thunder or lightning. And baby said,
dance, magic, dance.
Dance, magic, dance.
Dance, magic, dance.
That baby's telling you.
Okay, we had a little bit of technical difficulties there, but we are live, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Rattlegion Broadcasting Network presentation of a tribute to the life and times of David Bowie. I am your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And I'm happy to be doing this show tonight. Say that David Bowie has passed away at the age of, I believe, 69 from cancer, but we here at the RIB, we celebrate life. We don't mourn. We celebrate. We are here to look back at a great musician, hear some of his music, tell some stories, and share our love of David Bowie. And I am, of course, not alone, because who the hell wants to listen to me talk for an hour by myself? I am joined by someone who's not here at gunpoint.
not tonight, at least.
Come a little closer.
I know, it's uncomfortable.
Here, I'll turn it this way. Ladies and gentlemen, a bigger fan of David Bowie than I, a lifelong fan of David Bowie, and somebody who I can rarely get on a podcast, so this is extra special. This is Twilight time, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, the lovely Mrs. Melissa Rattledge. How do you do, madam?
I'm okay.
Excellent. And joining us, of course, is the pugilant, punchy boxer from New Jersey. He'll punch you in the eye, and he'll tell you to go make him a sandwich. There he is, folks. Wrestling historian extraordinaire, Mr. Pat Mullen. How do you do, sir?
I just want to make it clear, you know, I'm not punching nothing. I got what you might call a relaxed brain, but...
you do have a relaxed brain, I'll give you that, sir. Good to have you on, Pat.
Thank you. I'm ready to put on my red shoes and dance a little bit of the blues.
Excellent. We've got about 11 or so songs here that we're going to listen to tonight. And like I said, we're going to play it loosey-goosey. Just play some songs, tell some stories, share our love of Mr. David Bowie. I want to go over to Melissa in just a moment, but I know for myself, I didn't own any of his albums. My attachment to David Bowie came through going dancing. I don't know if people know this, but you know, in addition to being a wrestling fan and a movie enthusiast and all that, I was also quite the dancer back in the day. I used to go clubbing in New York City, and the kinds of places that I would frequent were 80s clubs or goth industrial clubs, and goth industrial clubs tended to also play an 80s set. So most of the time that I spent out dancing was listening to, there was a lot of David Bowie that would get played. More than I realized, as a matter of fact, as I went back through his catalog, I was like, oh, that's a David Bowie song? So that was my exposure to David Bowie. He made great songs to dance to. Now, Melissa, you're a lifelong fan. You were telling me some stories earlier, which I hope you'll share tonight. Why David Bowie? What's the attraction?
I always kind of had this weird infatuation for the British invasion and the British culture. So much so that at one point in time, I actually do think I faked a British accent for a while. But a lot of it came from growing up in a house with a dad who was in rock and roll in the 70s in Europe and worked with a lot of these guys. And I can remember hearing stories as a kid. You know, my bedtime stories were rock and rollers and the crazy things that they did on the road. And for some reason, David Bowie, especially when I hit about 12 or 13 years old, 14 years old, really started to kind of speak to me in that, I don't know, I guess that weird adolescent time when you feel like you'll fit in anywhere. So, you know, it just kind of evolved from my love of all things British. And
now, folks, she not only apparently once faked a British accent, but she also told me about the bougie teacher that she works with after working in a black school for a few years.
I don't understand why bougie is a black word. Considering that all of my very white, southern, affluent girlfriends use the word bougie to describe themselves, I don't understand.
Welcome to another edition of Assimilation Nation.
Yeah, take it easy, homie. we'll come back to you.
I think it's a northern thing. I do. I think y'all have, I don't know.
Y'all.
Shut up.
All right. We'll come back to the antebellum moment in just a moment. But, Pat. Now, you and I don't really connect on music. You said earlier you don't really listen to the Thursday Night Delight. That is the Metal Hammer of Doom. It's a little too heavy for you.
Yay!
Quiet, you. your music taste, what do you listen to, and where does David Bowie fit into that?
I'm legitimately really all over the place. Like, a few guys I've listened to, you've covered, bands like Clutch, but at the same token, I can listen to Clutch for a while, and then immediately after I can throw on some Stevie Ray Vaughan, or I can go Motown. I just love music in general, and, you know, I don't have a super taste preference for a genre, but Bowie's always just been really – he's just had something about him, and I think Melissa touched on it a little bit, not just because he's British, but he's one of those just people who is always cool, and you can't ever teach cool. You just have it or you don't, and – the guy found a way to remain not just relevant, but at the forefront of music movements for close to four decades. So there's a lot going on there. But my first exposure to Bowie had nothing to do with music. First time I saw him was in the movie Labyrinth, and we heard, you know, Magic Dance to start the show. And before I knew anything about this guy, I knew him as Jarrett the Goblin King.
I would say that's right for me, too. As I said, I might have known a lot of David Bowie's music without knowing it was David Bowie, which is typical for me, where I would hear songs and not necessarily connect them to an artist. But I think the first time I ever saw David Bowie and recognized him as a musical performer was in the movie Labyrinth, which is partially why I started the show with Magic Dance, because I think if there is one, you know, people have their time period of David Bowie that they like, that they prefer, whether it's the Ziggy Stardust period or what you call him, the White Knight.
Thin White Duke.
Thin White Duke.
You know, or later on. And for me, he'll always be, as you said, Jarrett the Goblin King with his huge god piece.
Do you know what's funny about that, though? Because I was saying, so I don't know, I know how old you are, right? But I don't know how old everybody is. But I'm probably the youngest of you guys, and that is not my first memory of him. And this is where I think background comes so heavily into play.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up, you know, my bedtime music was these great rockers of the 60s and 70s. So, you know, for me growing up, I knew David Bowie as David Bowie before I ever knew him as the Labyrinth King. In fact, I probably didn't even see Labyrinth until I was 10 years old.
Right. So let's get into, we got some music to play here. I got a lot of music to get through. And for people listening tonight, as I said, it's a celebration of his career, but it is not a career retrospective where, you know, we start at the beginning and work our way all the way to the end. I picked literally 11 songs to play that I knew were popular, songs that I like to talk about and listen to. My wife, and I read the list to Melissa. She said, oh, you picked a lot of the thin Oreo cookie series. What was it again?
The Super Aryan Dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did that by accident. I just went, oh, I like these songs. This is what we're listening to tonight. So let's go right into an old favorite of mine, probably the song I heard the most when I would put on my dancing shoes. This is Let's Dance. The whole song for the legal reasons. So there's a snippet. People listening to the Metal Hammer of Doom know that we only play about a minute of the song. But it brings back a lot of memories for me, like I said, going to certain clubs in New York City and hearing that was always a crowd pleaser. You know, if the dance floor got a little light, that one always brought out the girls. It would bring out the crowd, and people would start to dance and everything and have a good time. So, as I said earlier, David Bowie passed away from cancer at 69. We learned about this today. So, what was your first feeling when you saw that on the news this morning?
I was actually really devastated. I've had a rough weekend when it comes to finding out about losing people in your life. Found out that a very close friend of mine growing up's father died this week. So for me, it was kind of fuel to the fire. But it was really hard to hear because, you know, I actually said to my mom today, I was like, this is like a Beatle dying for me. And with me, that's a huge thing. I, as I said, I really, you know, have this deep-seated love. So it was really tough to hear, and it was one of those where you get a little sad because you know there's not going to be that music anymore and the new stuff coming out of him, and it kind of made me really want to, like, make Lillian Jonas watch The Labyrinth and listen to David Bowie songs today.
I think that's a very good point. I think one might describe David Bowie, on the one hand, at least in appearance, especially in his early stuff, as avant-garde. I don't know if – I think he was very, very unique. And, well, someone might have heard that last song and some of the other ones we'll hear tonight as oh, that's pop. That's okay. That's mainstream. That's easily digestible for the average person. I don't think we'll ever have another David Bowie type again in the music world. I just – and I'm not really whining about that. It's just sort of an observation. I think it was Everclear or not Everclear. It was Oasis who said, "Why can't we be the Beatles?" And it's, you know, part of that is time and place. When David Bowie came onto the music scene and broke through with the Life and Times of Ziggy Stardust, or the Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust, whatever it was called, he was doing something very new with music. And I don't know what else is left to be sort of explored and what new ground there is to break. I guess when it happens, we'll know. But when you think about people who are hitting the top of the charts now and doing some amazing things, they're singer-songwriters, but it's they've just got amazing voices. But they're not really...
No, they have great electronics.
Oh, they have great electronics. But they're not necessarily breaking new ground musically. I want to throw in here, Pat, your thoughts about him passing this morning or his contribution to the music world, that sort of thing?
The first thing I did was I called my mom because my mom is the biggest David Bowie fan I know. You're talking about a girl who grew up, you know, born in the mid-60s and really had her formative time in the 70s when it came to music. And David Bowie, especially seeing him as Ziggy Stardust, was like an awakening for her as to things. And she just was a lifelong David Bowie fan. And so I called mom to see how she was doing because the day Lemmy died, she gave me a phone call as soon as she heard because it had that kind of similar effect on me. But musically, he was really a chameleon because he could do so many things with so many genres. You talked about Let's Dance and it being a very pop radio-friendly song. but Bowie had he just crossed over everywhere and had so many influences in his really, really formative years, where he would go from blues and experiment with a more hard rock sound at certain points. Like, and he could see things coming ahead when he formed Tin Machine in the late 80s. That was really the forerunner to your more Seattle-oriented grunge rock. Now, Bowie at the time was in the really worst point of his drug addiction and creatively very stifled, and so he started that off, but and it wasn't very good. But it's almost like they saw what he was doing and capitalized on it and took the parts that were broken of it and made it mass acceptable so that they could make money on it. And he's always done it. And go ahead.
No, I'm saying, make money he did.
Yeah. And to me, the first Bowie album I got into musically and I bought was his album Earthling, which came out in the late 90s because there was a single on there he did with Nine Inch Nails called I'm Afraid of Americans. And that's...
We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah. It was so weird that, like, you can have this guy who goes from Major Tom to Let's Dance to Fame and have the Halloween Jack stuff, and he goes into this heavy industrial sound, and it's awesome. And, I got hooked on that song and listened to the whole album, and I was like, man, this is kind of heavy, but it's cool. And my mom comes in, she's like, is that David Bowie when I first bought the album? So I'm like, yeah, you know him? And, you know, that's when she basically handed me copies of, you know, Let's Dance and Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars and Diamond Dogs and all these things. And I was like, wow, this guy's all over the place, but it's awesome. And you find out he was a guy who gave people like Stevie Ray Vaughan and Iggy Pop their first real exposure. You can't really differentiate genres more than those two guys and then go to Trent Reznor, but he did, and did it seamlessly.
Play another song here. I want to keep going with what Pat's saying, but let's play another song and we'll come back to the conversation. Speaking of someone's rising popularity, this is Fame.
My favorite little thing about that song, you know, who did backup vocals?
Who did backup vocals?
John Lennon.
Ah, it all comes together.
Yeah.
I am always amazed by an artist's ability to stay ahead of the trends, but also create music that is an expression of his time, the present time in the music industry, without becoming pretentious, or doing something that was so supposed to be timely, but because of whatever the issues are in production, missing that time period. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. Guns N' Roses, when they put out Chinese Democracy, was about 10 years too late. You know, it was this big industrial-sounding record well after industrial had risen and fallen in the mainstream, and it just sounded way out of date and this was just terrible. This is a terrible record.
What?
A Chinese Democracy by Guns N' Roses.
That's also what happens when you record an album and then mix it over 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. You sort of missed the boat. But I don't think Bowie ever did that. I think Bowie was always able to sort of juggle musical trends while, again, staying ahead of music and being able to experiment and try new things.
But I think part of that's because he collaborated well. I mean, this is amazing. Like, yes, he is extremely talented. But he was always that person who kind of figured out who was going to be a great collaborator. And he really
Mick
thought
Jagger
out.
Notwithstanding.
What did he say?
Mick Jagger notwithstanding.
Well, there's a whole other side to that.
Oh, well, talk about that. I don't
know. Well, I mean, there was always the thing about sexuality in David Bowie, and actually one of his apparent male love interests was Mick Jagger.
Did Mick Jagger return the favor?
Well, okay, so we all know, oh, well, Matt, but so my father in the 70s
was also in love with David Bowie?
No, was a roadie in Europe, and so one of the cool things growing up is that I, you know, my dad had these stories of these people in the 70s and the things that he had to do and the jobs he did, and, you know, pretty much anybody big in the 70s in Europe, or, you know, touring in Europe, my dad worked for. I mean, my dad worked for Paul McCartney. He worked for George, you know, everyone. But he actually one night had to babysit David Bowie and Mick Jagger at a concert. And David Bowie was there with Angie and Mick Jagger, and there was lots of very inappropriate things happening and fondling of each other. And this was by all three of them. So, you know, it is what it is.
Okay.
And if you've ever seen the Dancing in the Streets music video, that basically just gives you a visual on everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So, you know, some strange bedfellows sometimes makes for some very interesting music.
Definitely.
Pat, anything before we go on to our next song?
Well, you know, we were talking about how he was always able to not do something that sounded like it came out 10 years too late. But that's part of his genius. The album I talked about, Earthling, songs on that were recorded for an album he had done before that called Outside. But rather than reissue those songs, what he did was he listened to them, saw the changes in the music industry between, you know, 1993 and 1997, which were significant, and goes, this song's okay, but it needs to be reworked if it's going to be anything viable and hit at the time and still keep any artistic integrity. And that's what separates a guy like him from The Last Effort, from Guns N' Roses, and a lot of other people in that same boat. And, it shows how creative he can be, where some people can overstate what they're doing and just go in a direction where nobody comprehends it. But David, like Melissa pointed out, always had generally people around him who he could trust and work with and could keep that creativity in check and make it something that people love, like Nile Rodgers, who's a very famous producer who Bowie worked with a lot, and a few other people. But he was smart enough to know he couldn't do it all himself, and that's what kept him relevant so long in so many ways.
You know, it's funny. I want to play another song here, but I'll keep this really short. When it comes to stuff I know details about, I tend to know more details about film than anything else. And, we're talking about collaborating with other people and that creating a stronger pieces of art than living in a bubble and trying to do it yourself. And I just think, like, well, that pretty much sums up George Lucas. You know, you have all these great directors who are willing to collaborate with other people and take in great ideas and they give us these really wonderful movies. And then you have someone like George Lucas who trapped himself in a bubble, sought out no other collaborators, and then gave us the prequels. And this is not a dissertation on that. But I think musically, that's sort of what I'm thinking about, is how, you know, you have your George Lucas types, and then you have those kinds of problems where they create dated material. They create material that no one's connecting with because essentially they're expressing themselves without any other way of connecting that material to other people, if you sort of understand what I'm trying to say. This next one, number 3 in our hit parade, this is China Girl. Mm-hmm. Fat, that was one of the ones you wanted to hear tonight. Tell me about it.
Okay, so the amazing thing about that song is a lot of people don't know that it's a cover, and it was originally recorded by David's good friend Iggy Pop, and it had a much different sound to it than that. If you've never heard it, imagine an alley cat that sees another alley cat, and they're trying to fight over the same piece of rotten fish that somebody threw out, and they're just wailing at the top of their lungs with a much less harmonic and melodic beat to it, especially without the Asian influence that was thrown in at the beginning. But that just shows you how cool and how smart David is, that he could take that, rework it, and make it into one of his biggest hits of the entire decade of the 80s, where it would play in constantly remixed versions at dance clubs, and it was all over the place. The video you couldn't miss on MTV or NBC's Friday Night Videos. And again, we talked about him being a musical chameleon. Take a cover of something by the Stooges, who were one of the most influential punk groups of all time, and you make it into commercially viable 80s dance pop. It's absurd. And the fact that his is so much more well-known than theirs just shows how big he made it.
Yeah, Anthrax did that with a song by a band called Trust, which was in French, the original. You might know it now because it ended up in, I think, Guitar Hero 4. But people for the longest time thought Antisocial was an Anthrax song. Same thing with, I believe it's All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix, was actually
Bob
Dylan.
Yep.
And Bob Dylan liked Hendrix's version so much, he was like, yeah, it's yours. I am signing over my baby to you. As that song was playing and you were talking about the video, Melissa whispered over to me, she said,
the video creeped me out.
So tell me about the video and why it scared you.
There was the woman, the Chinese woman, and like the way she had that. What I distinctly can remember is her wearing the very long, pointy gold fingernails. And
yep.
You gotta remember
like
that.
Alicia fingernails?
No, like Asian. But they're not real. They're like metal caps that you put over your finger, and they're part of Asian culture.
More like a superhero kind of a thing.
No, it literally goes on your screen. Okay, think Michelle Pfeiffer who is the Catwoman? Yeah, it was Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
When she was doing her Catwoman costume and she put the little things over her fingers to be the cat, those, but gold.
Okay.
And it, let's
keep in mind. Was the China woman also wearing a raincoat that was sort of sewn together?
No, she wasn't. But, like, I also was young when this came out. So it always kind of creeped me out a little bit. But that song, though, to me, is quintessential 80s. Like, when I think 80s music, like, China Girl is one of those songs that kind of sticks in your brain. I'm like, yeah, this is the 80s.
I'm going to say this for Pat's benefit and Pat's benefit only. When I heard the opening, not really a guitar lick, but when I heard that opening ode to the Asian culture there, first thought I thought, oh, this sounds like Kakuchi coming out to the ring.
It's very close. And but yeah, I remember too that song was released at a time, China Girl, when a lot of Asian culture was making its way into the United States en masse. And I, as somebody who lived in Brooklyn's version of Chinatown at the time, or at least what became Chinatown in Brooklyn, that was pretty relevant too historically at the time, because we had a ton of Chinese-owned businesses, Korean-owned businesses, Japanese-owned businesses coming in, and not even just in Brooklyn, but in the United States, you had the Japanese taking over a ton of U.S.-owned businesses. So it shows the genius of the guy, where he took that song, not only just reworked it and made it a pop hit, but that it's timely relevant, and people would pay attention to it just because of that.
Indeed. Now I'm going to move into one of my favorite David Bowie period, separate from his dance hall fame. This is where we start to get into the sci-fi character aspect of David Bowie, his Ziggy Stardust period, and that's what we're going to start with right now. This here is Ziggy Stardust.
Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Digger's band. Dickie really sang, screwed up eyes and screwed down hair too, like some cat from Japan. He could lick 'em by smiling, he could leave 'em to hang. They came on so loaded, man, well hung in Snow White pants.
One of the artists, modern artists, that took a cue from David Bowie and would rework it and add it to his own repertoire was Marilyn Manson. And the curiosity about that is...
That's actually really funny.
My wife is scared to death of Marilyn Manson. If we're driving... Hang on.
He actually wrote a really nice tweet tonight about David Bowie.
Okay, I'm going to give you an opportunity here, but first let me get to it. See,
fine.
So my wife can't be in the car when, like, the beautiful people. She hears the da-da-da-da-da of the beautiful people. She, like a cat, will just run out of the car into the clouds. We won't see her again. Just absolutely scared to death of Marilyn Manson. And you know, and it's funny to me because you look at pictures of the Ziggy Stardust character that Bowie created, and he's got the face paint on, and you know, he's got that
red hair.
And you know, it's clearly created a rock and roll character. And this didn't bother you as a kid, but Marilyn Manson does talk.
Yes, because he wasn't dark.
Okay.
Like, this wasn't dark. It was colorful, and it was pretty, and it was very feminine. And then you have Marilyn Manson, who just was scared.
Who's dark and feminine?
Well, let's contrast Ziggy Stardust.
What was that, Pat?
Let's contrast Ziggy Stardust with probably the one other person at the time who created and cultivated the character but went to the other end of the spectrum with it and went the dark route, Alice Cooper. And
sure,
those two guys at the same time were doing the same concept. They created a character that was a stage persona that, you know, they based their music around. And it was, you know, Mark and I are professional wrestling fans. It was what we would refer to as a gimmick character that they invented, that they could use. And, you know, while Bowie kind of went a more experimental, melodic, androgynous route, Cooper went dark and sang about Welcome to My Nightmare and how he loves the dead before they're cold. And, you know, it was two sides of the same coin that went in different directions, but it was the same concept that worked for both guys. I just think Bowie is one of those guys where he got bored with Ziggy Stardust and needed to move on to other stuff, and that's when he came up with Halloween Jack, which was a transitional character, and went to the Thin White Duke, and Cooper kind of went into different things. But they also both came up with the idea of doing these concept albums where the songs all banded together to tell a story, where you had Bowie doing Aladdin Sane and Cooper doing Welcome to My Nightmare. And it's stuff that really nobody else has done it that successful of a level. And it's to the point where people thought Major Tom was a Bowie character. He's not. He's the narrative of the story. Just like in Welcome to My Nightmare, Steven is the character who's in the narrative and journeying through these different levels of hell and nightmares.
Years later, Trent Reznor's Downward Spiral would take a cue from this sort of storytelling through an album. The entire Downward Spiral is supposed to be one long story. Clutch does it as well. Their Robot Hive Exodus is a science fiction story, as is, I believe, the one before it, with the Mob Goes Wild and all that. A big Clutch fan I am. I can't remember the name of the albums anymore. But, yeah, it is interesting. So you don't find, Melissa, the Ziggy Stardust character to be threatening.
No.
But Alice Cooper character.
I was never an Alice Cooper person, so that one, I don't think it was a threatening thing. I just never got into Alice Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
But Marilyn Manson was definitely threatening. But again, how old was I when he was hitting it?
I don't know, 2.
Yeah. But I was young. I mean, I was young, and it
right.
was definitely not my musical taste, especially at that point in my life, because in that point in my life, I lived in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he really bothered me.
We're gonna.
But he did write probably one of the nicest tributes I've seen on social media. I'd have to go find it, but just basically talking about how, as a kid, like he helped him to realize that it was okay to be an outsider and to have your own way of doing things and looking at the world, and that we would all find acceptance in our individuality. And it was actually, I'll go find it in the next song. But it really, you know, in all. As much as I do not like Brian Warner, Marilyn Manson, it was very, very well written.
And I think it's still relevant today, the idea of it's okay to be an outsider and, you know, be a star, don't be a bully and all that. Though, of course, if you spend enough time online, you find that we could use a dose of being
testosterone,
being a society and less individualism. My goodness. Would you say that?
Testosterone?
I was going to say civility. This next song is in every science fiction film ever written. This is Space Oddity.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
Every time we lose Matt Damon in Face, or there's some sort of mission.
McConaughey.
Or anybody spends way too much time on the International Space Station.
Yeah, you know, Sandra Bullock is knocked around by a loose satellite. You hear this song. It's just that you cannot now disconnect this song from the science fiction film genre. They are now one and the same. Go ahead, Pat. You're starting to react to that. I didn't want to talk over you.
No, it's the quintessential space song in anything. And even when they go back and show clips of movies that predate the song, they throw the song in. But it's it's like Space Odyssey 2001 came out 4 years before that song did. But whenever they show that movie, they somehow find a way to incorporate that song into it in a commercial or a teaser spot.
Right.
Bowie always had a thing for space, and I think as an actor, everybody points to him in Labyrinth or his recent cameo in The Prestige as Nikola Tesla. He made a science fiction movie called The Man Who Fell to Earth, based on a novel
by one
of my favorite
movie ever.
Yeah. It's based on a novel. Go ahead, Melissa.
Oh, I was going to say, it was insane. I mean, I remember begging my parents, when I was going through my phase, I begged to watch this movie, and we actually had to go to Blockbuster and hunt it down, and then I sat and I watched it, and at the end, I literally stood up, looked at my mom, and go, I don't understand any of this, and walked out of the room.
Yeah.
Somebody watched THX for the first time. I don't understand what happening?
It's really the same reaction you'll get. And everybody points to Bowie as an actor in that, but they cast him in this movie based on a novel by Walter Tevis, who's one of my favorite writers. He also wrote The Hustler, The Color of Money, a lot of other stuff. And this movie is a much more, what's the word I'm looking for, extravagant performance by Bowie than Labyrinth, which is crazy because he really hams it up in that. But he has to go all over the place in this movie, from being this alien who's supposed to save his world by collecting water, and he becomes a successful billionaire, but he becomes addicted to alcohol and television, and it's just so bizarre and such a mind trip, especially the first time you see it, and you're just left like, huh? I don't know what I just watched, but he was really good, but I think he was really good, but I don't know where this went.
Yep, I was totally wrong. I mean, I was like 15, I think, when I watched it, but it was definitely one of those things where I'm like, I don't know what just happened, and I'm sure this is some deeply artistic thing that I, you know, when I'm older, if I watch it, I will have some
I compare it to watching a cartoon movie called The Last Unicorn when I watched it after I ate a mushroom.
I think that movie was a mushroom trip, quite frankly.
All I remember from The Last Unicorn is the fucking skeleton screaming, "Unicorn!"
You know, Lily keeps trying to watch that on Netflix, right?
The Last Unicorn.
And I won't let her.
She already has a problem with nightmares. For those of you keeping score, in the David Bowie filmography, I'm just now realizing this. He's in SpongeBob's Atlantis SquarePants from 2007, and he's in SpongeBob's Truth or Square in 2009. There's David Bowie for you.
He did everything. So part of that might have been there was a song of his in it.
Yeah, well, with SpongeBob SquarePants, it could have been, you know, just a cutaway gag, and who knows. I just, of all the things I saw in his filmography, that stood out to me. SpongeBob. All right. All right, speaking of that, let's go to another song here. This is again one of my personal favorites. This is Changes.
My time was running wild in the dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
That is a great example of somebody who loves a song, has heard a song for years, 100,000 times, never once knew who the artist was. I would just hear it in commercials, like hear it in movies, hear it on the radio, thought it was spectacular, had no idea until today, as a matter of fact, that it was David Bowie.
Are you serious?
Swear to God. First of all, I think the first time I may have heard it might have been in a commercial. I might have not have known it was a real song.
It was in the Breakfast Club. Oh, no.
Who did you think it was?
My wife just asked me the same question. I don't think I had anyone in mind. Different from you two, I grew up with parents who either listened to 50s music or, like, show tunes. I guess the first time I heard it must have been on the radio when my mother was playing music, and she would, and maybe you know what I'm talking about here, Pat, having grown up in the tri-state area, WCBS FM, we play your favorite
101.1.
That's right, with Cousin Brucey, New York. Remember that?
Still going strong, Cousin Brucey.
That's right. Well, I had to have heard changes at some point on that radio station, so I assumed, if you know anything about the music of that era that they play there, it's like a million and one bands all singing the same stuff, you know. So I just go to some, you know, random 60s group, some, you know, some doo-wop, or, I mean, that's not doo-wop, but some just random 60s music that I never connected, you know, because you got to understand, if I heard it on my parents' radio, I might have liked it, but I never really sought out listening to, you know, to who it might have been from. I was much more into forming my own identity and discovering my own music.
Do you know what, though? I'm giving you crap, except I would have bet money and lost big that John Lennon was the background vocal on that song.
And who was the background vocal?
Not John Lennon.
Not John Lennon.
But that was one of those songs, like, when I would hear it, I think when I got introduced to it, I thought it was a collaboration, John Lennon, David mm-hmm. Bowie, and I was convinced.
He did. He did co-write with him, though, didn't he?
Not on this song. That was when that was Fame.
See, you could have convinced me that that was a folk song.
They hadn't met each other yet at this point.
That was like Peter, Paul, and Mary or something, and I would have believed you. That's my point, is, like, I would have never guessed that the guy doing fucking Ziggy Stardust, you know, and Space Oddity and all this other nonsense was also singing that song. That's what I mean by, like, he just really runs the gamut of different styles of music, and it's pretty amazing. Let's go on to another one, which, again, I would find out years later was by David Bowie. This here is Young Americans. Another one that they would play in clubs, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's not really like a real dancey tune, but I know I've heard it in clubs before. That's the funny one. Got any? Let me ask you, Pat and Melissa. You can jump in on this one. So, like I said earlier, and I read off this list of songs, and Melissa said, "Oh, you picked a lot of the Thin White Duke stuff." What? Tell me, what is the Thin White Duke? What was he going for there? What did it all mean? What's it all about?
Remember when I said he's like an Aryan dream?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of it. There was like a big cabaret movement in Germany at one point. You might remember people like Taco and Klaus Nomi. And like, so Bowie looked at that culture and he kind of took a little bit of that, added a little bit of the character he played in the movie we mentioned before, The Man Who Fell to Earth. And kind of Nazified it a little bit with always wearing this waistcoat and the slick back hair. And it was supposed to be like a villainous character.
Okay. Kind of a Bond villain.
Yeah, kind of just a militant, like, I think he once described, and I want to get this right, he described him as ice masquerading as fire, I think is how he said it.
Interesting.
I said that's more than it's more than I knew, because that was one of those things I never really dug deep into that stuff. So, but interesting trivia: background vocals on that song, Luther Vandross.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that was during a time when Bowie thought music had lost the importance of its melodies and harmonies, which is what he fell in love with from like the Motown era. So he wanted to bring that influence back, and that's he found a young Luther Vandross who hadn't yet gotten his big break.
Really?
He called it plastic soul. I'm reading it on Wikipedia right now, guys. I'm not that insightful. If there's a Paul McCartney or John Lennon or George Harrison or Ringo Starr, I could give you like the deep down dirty without Wikipedia.
Or Common Core.
Shut up. but on some of the signs you have to look it up. But yeah, Luther Vandross is on this song.
Okay. So I love this next song for all the controversy that was created out of it when a certain rapper didn't steal the bass line as he purports. This, of course, is David Bowie and Queen, Under Pressure.
See, there's that little bit of ching. It's not the same.
So my favorite is Mark had to play that for me because I've never heard Vanilla Ice, like, you know, defending himself. And he said that. And then I was listening to it just now, and I'm like, no, there's that ding, 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 ding right there, too. You can't convince me in any way, shape, or form that you did not completely 100% steal that.
It doesn't matter because Vanilla doesn't get paid for it anyway.
If you ever hear the entire interview, he actually goes through a whole thing about how rap is just about stealing other people's music and defends it. He's like, you know, and then he goes on to say that this was about money and credit, that if my album had only gone gold, they wouldn't have even gone after me about using that hook. But because I went, like, you know, 5 times platinum, yeah, now they want a piece of the action. And it's so funny because then if he had just stuck with that, and be like, yeah, I totally took Under Pressure. Fuck these people. So I would have respected Vanilla Ice for that. But then he goes on to say, but I didn't even steal from them. Mine's a little different. No, you asshole.
Well, keep in mind, Ice Ice Baby wasn't even supposed to be the single. It was supposed to be Play That Funky Music, White Boy, which he also didn't steal. And they thought that that might get him into legal trouble, so they decided to release Ice Ice Baby first.
And the rest is history. It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy because I can remember being like a kid in the car, and you'd start to hear that the line, and you're like, "Oh, it's gonna be Under Pressure," and then it wasn't, and I would be so devastated.
Stop.
But you know the thing, the one great thing, and Gavin, we were talking to Gavin Napier, our good friend, earlier today about this. And how many people can do a duet with Freddie Mercury and not just be completely outshined and blown away as a vocalist? Because we've talked about Bowie in like concepts and his visions and how he can meld music. This is one where he really gets to stand out as an amazing vocalist without question. And you know, he starts off in a very low tone to contrast, you know, the bombastic Freddie Mercury's voice, and then builds it up and lets himself rip, and he's amazing. And he never really gets enough credit as a vocalist.
The isolated vocal tracks on that, which are all over the internet right now, but I actually happened to listen to today, like that, it just proves that point on how strong of a voice he has. And then the funny thing is, I was just reading, you know, there's all over right now the internet random, you know, little factoids and tributes to David Bowie. And one of the things they talked about is when he was in school and in choir, he got mediocre marks in choir as a child, which I thought was really funny because, you know, now he's David freaking Bowie.
You know, that's the thing. The teachers are looking for a certain thing. And
like skipping.
Personal story there. Oh, fucking, you know. So my poor child.
You're not going to tell a story about your dog again, are you?
Not about my dog, you jerk. But my daughter, as a matter of fact. She just transferred from the beginning dance class to the more advanced dance class, and the teacher basically said, "You can't even skip. You suck. You have a month to improve, or we're sending you back to remedial dance." And you know, my kid took it on the chin. My wife, however, was devastated.
They kept well, you know, everybody, you know, people need sandwiches too, guys.
All right, this next one is a great song. This is called Heroes. Tonight, I said to Melissa, I said, you know, I'm such a whore. I'm such my preoccupation with money. Even this podcast tonight, you know, yes, I wanted to talk about David Bowie and listen to his music, sort of revel in his career. But there was definitely the taking advantage of an opportunity while it's hot to generate clicks for the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network. I won't lie, that was a big part of this tonight. And I walked out of the kitchen. And I expect Pat to pass all of this on to our friend Jed so that I can be later called a money-hungry Jew. But I said to Melissa, I said, you know, again, starting with the line, I'm such a whore, I missed my calling as a movie producer because he would have died this morning, and by lunch I would have had somebody writing a script, a biopic about David Bowie set for release December 25th, 2016. Like, immediately, taking advantage of this poor man's death, I'd have been like, yes, now is the time. Strike while the iron's hot. We need a David Bowie biopic. And I said that only because, like, okay, David Bowie, he's in the news. Now's the opportunity to do all these things. This is sort of a timing thing. And I said it without ever knowing, does David Bowie even have any, like, dramatic controversies in his life that would make for an interesting movie?
He had to change his name from Davy Jones to David Bowie.
Oh dear. Well, You could stretch that into a movie.
I know he's happy. Yeah, I know he got in trouble in the 60s and 70s because he made some comments about his sexuality. And, you know, at one point he made a comment about, oh, I'm gay. You know, he probably was bisexual, but he made comments about being gay, you know, was always with women. And I mean, that would be probably the weirdest thing, but, you know, truth be told, for the last 23 years or so, he's been married to Iman and living a quiet, you know, quiet life.
And that's the other point that I wanted to make is he really stands out to me, you know, somebody who got popular in the 60s and 70s, who went through an entire, you know, four-decade career and didn't have a major controversy. I mean, I'm going to reference Axl Rose again. He didn't set off a riot in Canada.
He got busted for pot, but yeah. Everybody did. I mean, Paul McCartney got busted.
Yeah, who doesn't get busted for pot? You can't point to David Bowie and be like, oh, he went through this, I'm a horrible human being. Because I think about, like, Johnny Cash, you know, who had a biopic made of him.
It was much more similar to Brian Wilson.
And it's just like, yeah, I don't know if there'd be anything even dramatic to put on screen that would be of interest to people. You know,
what about when he bottled his own urine?
He bottled his own urine?
So that the witches couldn't get it.
All right, what are you talking about, sir?
And at one point, when he was really in a terrible state of addiction to multiple things, particularly cocaine, he literally went batshit and would leave himself in his house for weeks at a time, not leave, bottle his urine so that it couldn't be kept by witches to do voodoo or what have you on him, and lived on a diet that consisted of milk and green peppers.
At what point in his career was this?
Actually, one of his more creative and successful points in the late 70s, right after he did the recordings of what's come to be known as the Berlin Trilogy, which we just listened to Heroes, which is one of the three albums that makes it up, along with Low and I forget the third album, but that's during that period.
Okay. I think if someone takes my idea, which the Radicalism Broadcasting Network is also, you know, as always, we have an uncredited consulting role in Hollywood. People, unpaid interns, listen to our programs, take our ideas, and do things with them. This happens. You've never listened to our show before. I guarantee you, now that I've said it, someone out there is like, holy shit, he's right, and he's now going to work on a David Bowie biopic. It might be on VH1, but they're doing it. I swear to you. But it would probably be bad. It would probably be, you know, the early struggles, the 60s and 70s stuff, and it would end in the 80s. Because I don't think there's anything much to other than he became a multi-platinum musician.
Does it end with him meeting Iman?
That's what I was just thinking, because as he was talking and he was like, oh, it runs. When you were talking about the stuff with the height of the addiction in the late 70s, I was like, oh, well, that's right before he divorced Angie. So I actually could see that going that way. Actually, this sounds more like a Lifetime movie.
In what way is this a Lifetime movie?
Well, because it's like that struggle and the craziness and then getting out of the bad relationship and finding the good one.
Bad relationship? Tell me about that.
Angie, him and Angie?
Yeah.
Oh, well, he was married to Angie.
Angie who? Ami?
I don't know what her
Angie
name
Bowie.
Is. Angie Bowie.
She was an actress.
Actress, model. She's just as crazy. And in fact, she's currently living in the Big Brother house in England. And there was stuff all over the news about how they actually did not tell her. They had to wait to tell her because they were completely cut off. But she's kind of an insane person.
Okay.
And she was a big catalyst for a lot of the issues that he had.
Okay. Did not know that.
His ex-wife was crazy.
Huh. Wonder how much of his musician, how much of his songs came out of the angst that was provided by that relationship.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Here's another one that I didn't realize was by David Bowie originally, because the first time I heard it by Nirvana. This is the man who sold the world.
Nirvana covered this?
Nirvana sucked.
I was too young for so many times.
Accidentally stumbled upon the Nirvana Unplugged performance on MTV when they first ran their initial series of unplugged performances. I happened to be at a friend's house, and I was flipping through the TV, and I happened to see Kurt Cobain in the rocking chair playing an acoustic guitar. And, yeah, they covered this, and, gosh, what's the other one they did?
Another song by more talented.
Yes, another song by a more talented band. I like Nirvana. Shut up. But so yeah, I heard they played "The Man Who Sold the World." I had no idea who it was by. I thought it could have been an original Nirvana song for all I knew. Would later find out that it was actually a David Bowie original.
A lot of people that covered him. I mean, "Heroes" got covered by the Wallflowers, and I actually really like that version.
There's tons of punk covers of Ziggy Stardust. There's probably some covers of Space Oddity out there. There might be one of Young Americans.
Fame is ripped off all the time by rappers, but, you know, rappers don't steal anything.
No. Any thoughts here, Pat, on The Man Who Sold the World?
It's an interesting song. I was actually going to go back to the last song we played, though, Heroes, because it's probably one of your more favorite songs, I would think, Mark, that he's done.
Heroes? Absolutely.
Okay, well, and no surprise then, do you know who happened to play guitar on that song?
Who played guitar on Heroes?
Robert Fripp, who is the lead guitarist of a band called King Crimson.
That would make sense. I know of King Crimson. I've heard King Crimson before. A progressive rock band. Good stuff. So we're winding down here. We've got one more track to play, and then we're going to do a bit of an outro after our final conclusions here. You know, we've been talking about this and that, you know, trying to keep the stuff relative to the songs that we're playing. Well, so you got any good stories, anything else you want to talk about, you know, Burning Desires, anything you want to, any David Bowie-related material you want to share with the world?
Actually, a really funny thing that pops out for me is, so in 97, he turned 50. And this is kind of at the height of my introduction and you know, fascination, obsession with David Bowie. And they were doing this pay-per-view concert in New York. And I wanted to see it so bad. And one of my parents' friends, who was kind of the person who led me towards the David Bowie path after being this, you know, a big Beatles person for many, 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 many years, was like, oh, just get him drunk and tell him you want it and he'll buy you anything you want. And so I can remember, you know, I can remember my dad pretending to be, you know, overly indulgent in cocktails one night and me going and asking him if I can order it and him going, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. And I can remember ordering it. I can remember watching it and videotaping it, and I can remember over and over and over and over again watching that concert. And, you know, you were talking about Afraid of Americans at the beginning of the show, and it was so funny because I am not a Nine Inch Nails Trent Reznor industrial person at all. And I can remember trying so hard to really like this industrial stuff he was doing on the show, but secretly wishing, like, oh, why can't I hear some of the older stuff too?
Hang on, funny side story about that. One of our first dates was going to see Ministry live in St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
And she married me anyway, folks. How about you, Pat? Any burning desires? Any stories left unsaid? Anything you want to share with the world, David Bowie related?
So my maternal grandfather was probably about as hard a man as there was. You know, veteran of two wars, was an iron worker.
immigrated from Canada to the United States when he was 15 after he had already worked for 3 years in a slaughterhouse. So he was not.
Wait a minute, you're Canadian? I need to talk about this. You're Canadian?
Has this not been established already?
No.
I'm pretty sure this is covered ground.
No, not on one of my shows. I didn't realize it's for a Canuck. All right.
I'm a hoser. Anyway, but, you know, so probably about the least likely fan of David Bowie that there would be. Although once my mom did catch him singing Blondie's Heart of Glass after he came home from the bar one night. But
oh, that's great.
Yeah, but anyway.
I want to make a movie like your grandfather.
Yeah, mom and her best friend at the time, huge David Bowie fans when he was doing his Ziggy Stardust stuff. And they had this one guy friend who was kind of thin and always was, you know, hanging out with them all the time. And eventually, after much coercion, he allowed them to turn him into Ziggy Stardust.
Awesome.
And they cut his hair and used food coloring to try to dye it that orange-red color that he had into that mullet. They painted the lightning bolt over his face and made him up very, very pale with, makeup. And put him into their clothes to make him have that androgynous, you know, effeminate appearance. As soon as he was finished, my grandfather came home from work and just looked at him for a good hard minute. And then, as he would do in his thick Canadian accent, Darty, my mom's name is Dorothy, and that's how he pronounced it. Darty, what the fuck is this? And at that point, nobody said a word, and everybody just kind of either left or walked into another room.
Right. That's funny. All right, before we play this last song here, I want to get your impressions. It's 2016 now. Music has become a very...
Dead?
Dead. I was going to say compartmentalized thing. So by virtue of the internet, you have the long tail of musical discovery where it isn't quite the social gathering that it used to be. You don't have, in many ways, that artist that sort of captures the imagination of the whole world. You have niche markets. People come out now, and again, I don't, with Spotify and YouTube, I don't have to listen to anything. You know, there's no common radio moment anymore. We all can kind of go to our own little space on the internet and listen to exactly what we want to listen to. So with that being said, do you think that David Bowie 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now still has a lasting effect on the music industry, on the public at large, the musicians, or do you think his influence will fade into obscurity as the long tail continues to grow?
I think that David Bowie is one of those people that has influenced so many corners of the music industry that I think that it's going to take generations for his influence and his impact to dwindle. I think everyone kind of, when they really dig down to what inspired me, what influenced me, a lot of the music we're listening to now still is tracing it back to that. And I think that as long as there are people still interested in creating new and different music, they're always going to find him. And I do think he is going to be around for a while.
Pat?
I would agree. I think he's intertwined himself in so many different genres of music and is so influential over so many years that there may never be a point where there's not a piece of David Bowie in at least some type of popular music at the time, whatever year it may be. You can call it old or you can call it classic. The difference between old and classic is always good. And David Bowie's classic, and he's just always going to be that way. If his popularity couldn't die down, you know, after its zenith, and he kept finding ways to reassert himself into the top 40 of music through four different decades, there's just something that's unstoppable about him, the same way it is about the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or James Brown or anybody, where their influence is never going to go away. And I think, honestly, the strongest part of that is because music is so overproduced and computerized that it lacks heart and it lacks soul. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of classic music, you know, reach new levels of popularity now in TV commercials and things like that, because it has a heart and a soul. And Bowie always put everything he had into, you know, at least his non-really bad addictive years, he always put everything he had into his music. And I think that's something that you don't get anymore, and that's why he's always going to be relevant.
I couldn't think of a better introduction to our next and last song of the night. This is Rebel Rebel. Folks, is the end of our tribute to the life of David Bowie. He will be missed, but he will always be remembered. I think both of my panel members here both agree on that whether people know it or not, they will be channeling David Bowie for decades to come. And I know for myself, I've come to have a greater appreciation of his career and what he brought to the world of music by going over some of his greatest hits tonight and talking about them with friends and family here. So I hope you've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. Melissa, did you enjoy being on the podcast tonight?
I did, actually. This was not one where I hated you and wished that you hadn't gotten me involved. I am not a podcaster. I never feel like I have anything of value or importance to say. I am just a lowly school teacher.
Yeah, meanwhile, she like dominates the whole podcast.
Shut up.
This woman is currently on one of the highest listen to podcasts on the entire goddamn in the history of the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network. Our review of the Baby Metal self-titled album remains one of the most downloaded shows that we've ever done, and you're on it, so shut up.
I hate this country.
That's, of course, Pat Mullen. Pat, did you have a good time tonight?
I had a great time talking about one of the real musical geniuses of all time.
Well, it was a pleasure to have you on, Pat. Pat, you're on a podcast that I used to be on and have not found time to be on lately. why don't you tell us about it? I believe there's some boxing, there's some wrestling there. Why don't you share with the world where they can find your voice, your pretty Night Ranger singing voice?
Well, any 80s sitcom theme as well, for that matter, or some Nelson we could throw in too. But you can hear me semi-regularly over on thecasualheroes.com on two main podcasts there. We, of course, have our benchmark, our landmark show, the WrestleCast, that we try to record as often as we can when we don't take a six-month hiatus that we don't plan for. And there's also the Championship Rounds, which we do usually at least once a month, sometimes twice if we're really energized and have time. You can hear me on both of those shows. Go over to thecasualheroes.com anyway. There's a ton of content, literally something for everybody there, whether it's sports, wrestling, comic books, music, movies. We've got something to offer anybody at some point. So go on over there and listen. You can follow me on the Twitter machine that I never use, at P Mullen, MULLIN5. But if you leave me a funny comment, I'll generally find time to respond and mock you in some way.
Are you going to be on any of Jesse's shows in the near future?
It's tentatively, yes. It's not set in stone. We're trying to work out the schedule where we know which shows I'll be able to contribute to on the fantastic source material hosted by Jesse Starcher, which you can listen to here on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network, that we've preempted tonight.
Yes, bumped his ass to Wednesday. Speaking of Wednesdays, we'll be back. Robert Winfrey and I will be back reviewing movies at the end of January, beginning of February, with Kung Fu Panda 3. We'll be following that up with Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies. Despite the fact that my wife wants to go see the new Coen Brothers movie, well, it comes out the same week as Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, so that'll be one where you'll have to wait till the end of the year to hear my thoughts on it. And after that, we'll be reviewing Deadpool.
Hey, can I throw in one more plug, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. Plug away.
So a lot of people listening to the show obviously know that we're involved in the wrestling community to a point. So I purchased the DVD released by WWE, Owen Hart of Gold, which chronicles the life and career of Owen Hart. I just want to remind everybody that this particular production is in no way affiliated with Owen's family, his widow Martha and his two children, Athena and Oj. They are receiving no money out of this. So I encourage you that if you do buy the DVD, make an equal or greater contribution to the Owen Hart Foundation, which was started by his wife, Martha.
Very good. This Thursday, Metal Hammer of Doom comes back. Everything got thrown off. We had to reschedule the Long Road to Ruin. So the 2016 calendar year on Thursday starts up this Thursday with a Killswitch Engage retrospective on the Metal Hammer of Doom as put together by myself and Robert Cooper. And then a week from Thursday, Long Road to Ruin will come back and we'll be starting up the year with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Besides that, Melissa.
Do I have plugs?
Yes.
Don't get an education. Don't drive your teachers crazy.
If you've got kids in the Tampa Bay area and your elementary school sucks, what school should they send their children to?
I'm not saying that on air.
All right. Melissa, if people want to find you on Twitter or Facebook, how do they find you?
They don't.
All right.
I'm a teacher. I have to keep all this stuff private. I can't have people digging in.
All right. Do you have any nude photographs online? Is there anything you'd like to promote? You want to?
Promote you.
Promote me. I am promoting me.
Maybe one of these days it'll, earn us some money.
Go check out my YouTube channel. It's just Mark Rattledge on YouTube. If you want to see some music or movie reviews, some other stuff that I've done, old reviews that I've done with Melissa, as a matter of fact. We've got reviews of the Sex and the City 2 movie.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
What?
Yeah.
I am so good at manipulating him into seeing what I want.
So, yeah, but in the early stages of my movie reviewing online career there, I have a series of YouTube videos that were solely dedicated to Sex and the City 2.
You know what the frightening thing to me is? You're the type of person who can't go in without context either. So you at least watched the first movie, if not the show, too.
No, actually, I didn't. I went in cold.
But he kept asking me questions.
I was confused. I had no idea what was going on. They kept referring to someone named Big. I'm like, what's a Big?
Oh, thank Christ. He's the guy from Law and Order.
Yeah, I've discovered that later on in the movie. I think that's it. I think that's all. Yeah, so Rattlesnake and Broadcasting Network on Facebook. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, it's just at Mark Rattledge, MarkRadulich. And maybe someday I, too, will appear on a Casual Heroes podcast, but don't count on it. So for Mr. Pat Mullen, the pugilistic punchy puncher of New Jersey, and for my wife, the master of all things education and some things David Bowie, this has been a David Bowie tribute brought to you by the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network, and I am your host, the Mandarin Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified. Be well, be safe, and be afraid of Americans.
Pretend. Jonas in America. of American. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of American. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans.